welcome to the Citizen Bitcoin Podcast. I'm Brady, and I'm sharing my journey learning Bitcoin, hoping it makes yours a bit easier. Now, how's it going out there, all my Bitcoiners all around the world? Thank you for joining me again today here at the dawn of the Bitcoin Renaissance. I've got a really fun episode for you today with Dr. Noah Kaufman, ninja warrior, rock climber, entrepreneur, all-around interesting guy, also a Bitcoin maximalist. But before we dive in, let's check in with Swan. Buy now is coming. That's right. You'll be able to buy immediately from your Swan dashboard on top of your automatic recurring purchase plan. If you just feel that need and you want to scoop up some more sats on a dip, you'll be able to do that with Swan now. Top up your automatic recurring plan, which is really exciting. You can help us test that out at swanbitcoin.com/buy now. And actually, you can buy now already on Swan if you wire money in. You can send money in from your dashboard. Just click on create a wire. You'll get the instructions on how to do so. Your wired money will end up in your Swan account. And there's a button there to convert your wired money now, and it will buy your Bitcoin for you right away. And that has been used quite a bit by customers. We've had several $1 million wires come in, and all various sizes. We've had, you know, tens of millions of dollars in wires coming in. So that's super bullish, super exciting. If you need to make a big buy, a big purchase, maybe to kick off your Bitcoin accumulation, you've got a chunk of cash, you want to buy in big to start, and then auto DCA with incoming cash every week or day, this is a good way to do that. So check out Buy Now and go to swanbitcoin.com/buy now and help us test that out. Automatic buying with ACH with smaller amounts, and for larger amounts, you can buy now with wires. Awesome addition to the suite of features at Swan. Swanbitcoin.com to start your account today. And as always, thanks to the Let's Talk Bitcoin Network for including this podcast in their feed. LTBN is a great collection of Bitcoin podcasts all in one place, produced by BTC Media. Make sure you check out the Bitcoin 2021 conference in LA. It's going to be April 30th to May 1st. It is going to be an absolutely epic affair. Bitcoin 2019 was incredible. This promises to be even better. And Swan will be representing hard there with a massive presence. We're going to have a Swan Lounge, a physical incarnation of the Swan Lounge. It's going to be a lot of fun. You got to try to make it. All right, let's dive into this one. Noah Kaufman is an ER doctor. He is a rock climber, an avid rock climber. He has also appeared for many seasons on American Ninja Warrior, and he's a serial entrepreneur and a longtime Bitcoiner at this point. He's been around for a few years, and he's stacking with Swan. Really interesting guy. He knows his stuff, super smart. He and I talk about his interesting life. We talk about Bitcoin. We talk about monetary policy, Austrian economics. We talk about the future of Bitcoin, and just get really optimistic and hopeful about what Bitcoin can do for us as individuals and the world. All right, here we go. Man, all right, hey everyone. A few people rolling in. We'll get this thing kicked off. Welcome to episode 112 of the Citizen Bitcoin Podcast, brought to you by Swan Bitcoin. I'm here with Dr. Noah Kaufman. He is a Bitcoin maximalist. He is a ER doc in Boulder, Colorado. He is a serial entrepreneur. He was also part of the great and very fun show, American Ninja Warrior. And we're going to get into all that super interesting stuff. We're going to talk Bitcoin. We're going to talk Austrian economics and the tragedy of fiat money here today. Noah, welcome to the show, man.
Brady, so good to be here. Really excited and really love what you guys are doing with Swan.
Thanks. Appreciate that, man. Yeah, we actually had the chance to work together a little bit. You did more of the work than we ended up doing because we had a little bit of a miscommunication. But you wrote a piece about Bitcoin and doctors. And had it published recently, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's so important. You know, doctors are, we are kind of the proverbial dumb money. and, you know, I've like barely escaped that. I don't know if I could say I'm like kind of smart dumb money, but I've been orange pilled at this point. And, you know, I mean, look, I'm diversified. And I think as physicians, we're mostly more of a conservative bunch when it comes to finances because we're smart people, but we're so busy studying medicine and taking care of our patients that like the money accumulates. We've got a bunch of debt from med school and whatnot. Yeah. And we like to live these great lifestyles. We've got great cash flow. But we really just give our money to financial advisors and to people who we don't even trust them, but we don't know what else to do. And so, you know, it's really interesting. I got my Series 65, which is financial license, about 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Just because I was sick of not really knowing what to do, feeling like my financial advisor, you know, wasn't that smart, honestly, and, you know, was just like a middleman. And so that kind of led me, you know, through all sorts of things from options trading to like alternative assets to gold and silver. And Bitcoin was kind of always there. Well, when it started, you know, since it started, you know, around 2010, it was kind of always there in the periphery. And, you know, I always kind of looked at it and thought about allocating a little bit of money to it, never really knew how. And it was always pretty fringe really early. And so my story probably started around, 2016 or 15, when I got in with, unfortunately, not very much, you know, very little.
just you got to start, you know, it grows with your conviction over time.
It does. That's right. Like one of the popular sayings now is, you know, the more you understand Bitcoin, there's that great chart. The more you understand Bitcoin, the more of your net worth goes into Bitcoin.
Directly correlated. Yeah,
that's true. So, yeah, I mean, so now I'm trying to spread the word. I think that we all really, you know, as Bitcoiners, we all really understand what this means, where it's going. You know, I'm obviously preaching to the choir. You know, with the audience here. So we know that this is a finite supply, that it meets kind of the prerequisites of money and store of value better than gold or silver or anything else. Yeah. And so the real question is, you know, the grand prize is getting this thing adopted. And it is getting adopted by the real smart money now. They're starting to say, holy crap, you know, like it's time. There's allocations and, there's a big transfer, you know, from weak hands to strong hands, a lot of long vision, smart money is starting to slowly move into it. And yeah. So what I want to do is I have tons of friends and colleagues in medicine. You know, everybody's got, a good net worth because we really provide this valuable service to society. There's tons of problems with medicine. I don't want to get into that, but doctors for the most part, you know, besides the stereotypes of being somewhat arrogant and egotistical and definitely dumb money, doctors are mostly like very good people with good hearts and, want to see society improve. Most of us want universal care and we would take care of anybody, even if they didn't have money. And so, you know, when it comes to an idea and an ideology like Bitcoin, you know, if we can get doctors who have, you know, most doctors have net worths in the $1 to $2 million range or whatever. And if we get, you know, my idea was, okay, I am fully orange pilled. I'm fully gone down the rabbit hole. I've got, you know, as Raul Powell would say, like an irresponsibly long position on Bitcoin. And so, you know, if I can get my colleagues to, come into this asset class that I'm completely convicted on, you know, I have like full conviction on Bitcoin. There's like not a question in my mind. Then not only can we increase adoption, from some very, very smart and vocal people, but it's, you know, it's going to be better for them to preserve their wealth. You know, we've worked so hard and we're watching, you know, you know, our money kind of melt away in U.S. dollars. So, you know, it's kind of all the same arguments. But as a doctor, I felt like it would be a natural type of thing to do to show other doctors and say, hey, you know, look, this is it. Like, now is the time. It's still very, very early. You know, the big risk is not doing anything and not getting involved with this to the tune of 1 or 2% of your net assets. You know, the risk is almost is almost nothing. If it goes to zero, you know, you're going to be fine. But the upside is just like monumental. And I think it's an idea and an ideology worth propagating. You know, I mean, it's I think one of the best things that has happened to people in general because of, you know, the fact that all money systems are finally and ultimately corrupted. Mm-hmm. And finally, we have an immutable, you know, uncorruptible money source that, I mean, you know, the technology is solid, the ideology is solid. And, you know, I think that the idealism that's inherent in a profession like medicine is the perfect place to go and say, you know, by the way, with a ton of high net worth people.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, there's just hundreds of billions of dollars in doctors' pockets that are, you know, so anyway, I think that it's high time that, you know, physicians start paying attention. So that's why I wrote that article and some of my views.
Yeah. Yeah. So what kind of response did you get to the article?
Yeah, it's been good. I have had quite a few physicians and physician groups, you know, email me and request more information or ask questions. I think that there's still a lot of skepticism. I think that, you know, there is a lot of blind faith in the dollar because of recency bias, because of, you know, and the big concern is all, you know, everybody's 10 years behind. It's all, oh, well, this is money that's used for illegal purposes. And this is a big Ponzi scheme. And this is, you know, you know, and so, and people don't even realize that these big hedge funders and, you know, CEOs of big companies are flooding into this asset class. And so, you know, people think, oh, it's a bubble and I don't want to get involved and it's dangerous and it's a scam. And it's like the most rudimentary knowledge of what they've read, you know, what they've read online. So it's important to have a voice of reason. And it's easier as a physician, honestly, just to trust another physician, because we don't trust financial advisors or lawyers or anybody else, because they're just so full of shit. So.
Well, that's good to hear. I think obviously, like, the right, one of the, a great demographic to go after and convince. And, like, you know, I think doctors, you know, like yourself, would make also wonderful advocates once they're convinced, just being able to argue in favor of Bitcoin and just spread amongst that community itself. So what I found interesting there is that and you just kind of wrapped up with it too, and mentioned it again, that you had to become basically a financial manager. You got your C65. Yeah. Is that okay? One, because you don't trust other people with your money, right? You want to, you know, you want to manage your own money. Do you think that has anything to do with the nature of fiat money requiring you to understand all these investments as a store of wealth instead of just having a money that actually functions as a store of value?
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I really do think that it's by design, but when you think about it, we don't have any education growing up or through, you know, unless you like actually go into the field, we don't have education into medicine, you know, which is stupid because any one of us could sew, you know, suture your own leg up if you cut your leg.
Yeah.
And there's a million things that you could do, but no, you've got to go to the hospital and spend $2,000. It's ridiculous. And so in the same way that there's kind of a monopoly on that knowledge, I think by design, you know, the fiat currency system is built around this kind of shroud of like misunderstanding. And, you know, we've got a 70,000 page tax code. We've got a bunch of smart people who utilize lawyers to avoid taxes at the very top. And then everybody else, you know, it's like the whole system is shrouded in such complexity and such mystery And when you really start diving into it and you see how the central bank works, and that's like this private, you know, public, this private institution, basically, and how the rich and their friends are just really using this system to like suck money out of the hardworking people of the world, but, you know, of America, and it makes you want to vomit and then, you know, punch somebody in the face at the same time. You know, Bitcoin, something as simple and elegant as Bitcoin, finally gives us literally some hope. And I think it's funny, you know, you go to hope.com now and you get Michael Saylor's nonstop education. And that guy's great. I love him. But
he's so good.
He's so good. But, you know, like, I think that, you know, when you start to question the dollar and when you start to realize things like, they printed 22% of the dollars that ever existed last year. Like, how does that work? You know, like, how does how's that how's that going to affect the price of coffee? You know, and of a Big Mac or something. When you have this like unlimited supply of money, you know, it's supply and demand. It's like super easy stuff. It's like unlimited supply. Well, okay, if I've got a $1 billion and you've got $1 billion. How much is a cup of coffee going to cost? Well, who knows? Because everybody's got $1 billion. So how can you even, you know, and so that's what we're moving towards. Finance has always been like that, but it's always, you know, it's in this kind of, it's been in this huge credit cycle and debt bubble that just keeps growing and growing and growing. And finally, we're towards the end of that. Dalio, our at the end, seeing the value of their money disappear, we're seeing, you know, live, like, you know, the interest rate's at zero and money is so cheap that it's, you know, practically free. Yield on bonds and stuff, like corporate bonds, just started yielding like negative for the first time ever.
I saw that.
It's like, so the traditional 60-40 portfolio, it's like, well, now you can't be in bonds because if you're chasing alpha, you know, if you want to make money, like, you know, bonds have always been a safe place to, you make a, get a little bit of a return, but fixed income. So now people are starting to look elsewhere. All the smart money is turning to these alternative assets, and Bitcoin's at the front of the pack. So you get something simple and elegant like Bitcoin that, although there's a lot to understand, it's really pretty simple. You know, it's money that everybody can use. It's finite. I mean, there's no other asset in the world that is actually finite. And that is mind blowing. You talk
about
it.
It really is. That's a revolution right there. I mean,
it is. It's scarcity. Like, yeah. It's like, if you ever wondered what's going to happen to the price of Bitcoin, it's like, okay, well, there's accelerating demand. More and more people want it. But guess what? There's like diminishing, you know, growth of the asset class, which is, by the way, capped at 21 million. And we're, you know, 18 million into it. I mean, like, what do you think is going to happen to the price? You know, like, literally something crazy has to happen. Like, something crazy has to happen for it to really disappear. At this point, it's such a large network effect. So, yeah, I got my Series 65 because of the shroud of secrecy, because I didn't trust people with my money, and because, especially with the subprime mortgage crisis and what we saw in 08 and 09 with basically the collapse of the system, which was then postponed with this, you know, we overheated the economy. And now we're at a point where we're trying to do the same thing. It has diminishing returns in terms of liquidity production. Velocity of money is like basically at zero. When that kicks up, inflation is going to go through the roof. And all that money is going to go into Bitcoin and probably gold and silver, honestly, for the short term.
And Tesla.
So, yeah. Who knows? I mean, the market can stay irrational longer than you can stay. So I just bought some puts on Tesla. We'll see how that works.
Let's see how that goes.
They're leaps, so I got some time for them to crash. But Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating, and I think that you know, as physicians in general, there is a skepticism about money, about people. You know, we all go into it with this kind of like Jesus syndrome where we want to help everybody. It's all Mother Teresa. You know, I remember being 24 and going into medicine. I just wanted to help people, and I still do. I mean, I want to help people. And you start to get beat up by the system and disgusted by the system. And so, you know, I think that ultimately we would love to have the freedom to reinvent the system. But now the system's filled with administrators, and it's there's so much money in healthcare. We spend a third of our GDP on healthcare. We spend $12,000 per person, basically. And compared to all the other first world countries, the results we're getting are like much, much worse.
Yeah.
So a lot of problems in medicine. And I think that, you know, on the ground, we're practicing good medicine, but structurally, the whole thing is massively problematic. So, I'm kind of, I digress a little bit, but, bringing it back, doctors in general are skeptical about money to begin with. We're also very idealistic. So when you think about Bitcoin, it just doesn't make any sense for every single physician out there, I mean, honestly, for every person out there, not to have an allocation to something that actually can change the world for a lot better and level the playing field. And that's Bitcoin. And it's just, I'm so excited to be alive, in this period. Like, we're very lucky to be here.
100% agree, man. I think about that every morning, and blessed this year to have started working full time in Bitcoin. So I get to wake up and just jump out of bed and be like, I get to work on this thing all day. That's the dream come true, and it's
amazing.
It's an incredible time. I remember I'm a big student of internet history. I love reading about the beginning of the internet, the birth of the web, the big bubble and all that stuff, and that happened when I was a kid, and looking back at it is fun, and I kind of experienced it, but it's really awesome to be like kind of the prime of my working life and get to experience that again, another sort of birth of a revolutionary technology. And this one, maybe even more impactful,
Yeah. And that's the thing is, you can tell, you can tell, well, for me, I can tell a physician or I can tell someone like, look, this is as big or bigger than the internet. This is revolutionizing money. This is like it's hard to understand and wrap your mind around how important and pivotal this is for, this is like antibiotics in medicine. This is something that changes the paradigm completely. And as it's adopted, it's going to be very, very, very exciting. And you can tell that to, again, in my case, physicians or anyone. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay, I hear you saying that, but it's trickier to come up with the real world examples of why that's true and whatnot. And so one thing I've been focusing on is thinking about the real world examples of why Bitcoin, why this asset class is so phenomenally valuable. And some of the strongest arguments are just in what it's actually done and its functionality. A few weeks ago, $1.1 billion was transferred for about $4 in about 30 minutes with perfect safety.
Yep.
And unhackable. And it's like what other, do you know how much it would cost to move and how long it would take to move that much gold? You could probably write, you can't move that much money from one bank account to another without, days and days and intermediaries, and you got to trust the third parties. And then on top of that, the value of that $1.1 billion that you're moving in an asset like, or like a currency like the dollar is already worth, a lot less this week than it was last week. And wait till next year. It's not even going to be worth $1 billion in today's money next year. And so that's one of the funny things about Bitcoin is it does really have intrinsic value. You know, when we have, I'm an optimist, I'm a futurist. When we have colonies on Mars, mm-hmm. and the moon, you're not going to be sending gold. You know? And the dollar is not going to exist in the way it does right now. You know, it's a piece of paper. It's just like, you know, the images of the wheelbarrows with the, you know, the money that they're using for Firestarter, you know, in Zimbabwe, yep. or Venezuela now, you know, or Turkish lira. I mean, it's like they're all going the same way as all corrupted monies go. And so, you know, where do you fall back to? Gold or silver? Okay, it's like totally archaic. You can't move it around. It's, you know, it's a manipulated market. And so you're left with Bitcoin. And that's why all the smart money is moving to it. And, you know, so we got to get the people involved. I think the people need to buy it up before. I wish, you know, that more of the people were buying it up before the, you know, the governments and the hedge funds and everybody else does. But that's the way that money works. You know, it's always going to be like that.
Yeah. And the, you know, the adoption of new technology, that graph that we see a lot in Bitcoin, on Bitcoin Twitter, and just in technologies in general, where you have the early adopters and then the smart money comes in. And then it's sort of mass adopted right after that. And, you know, I think we're transferring now from the early adopters to the smart money. And this past 10 years, that was your chance as just a regular Joe to front run the smart money. It's starting to come in now. And
I think we've got a little while longer. You know, I mean, it's still so early, you know, It's hard though. You know, most of the doctors I talk to, oh my gosh, Bitcoin's $19,000 for a coin. I don't want to buy it.
Yeah.
Well, no. This is subdivided, just like pennies to a dollar. This is subdivided into these things called sats. And you should just buy, you know, you could spend $100 or, you know, like I love Swan because I don't have to look at it. I know that every week I'm just putting money into it. You know, and every week part of my paycheck is going to Bitcoin and I'm cost averaging in. And you know, for anybody who's watching, I don't get paid by Swan. I'm not, I don't earn anything from them, but I do use y'all service. I also use, you know, I've got cold storage. I also use BlockFi. I use Voyager. I think that, you know, we're all in it together and we want to grow this industry. You know, I'd just want to do everything that I can do because I really think that it's just so exciting, you know, and it's unbelievable. So
it's so exciting, man. Tell me a little bit about your story, your Bitcoin story. You said you got in around 2015, 2016.
Yeah.
The evolution of like your conviction, who you looked to, in terms of like education, et cetera. What's your most recommended like resources now to doctors who are trying to orange pill?
Yeah. So, well, I guess first and foremost, you know, I've always had an interest in finance. I never felt that I wanted to like make money out of medicine. I wanted to fill my soul. I wanted to help people. I wanted to make a good living and pay off the six figures I had of, you know, loans for med school. And so I always felt, okay, well, I'm going to make money buying and selling stocks, you know, and trading options. So I'm going to learn everything I can. I did pretty well doing that, you know, up to a point. And then, you know, one year I did phenomenally badly, you know, just being completely honest. And that taught me probably more than doing well.
Sure.
But I, you know, I really realized along the way that everything was kind of rigged for the smart people who had their, you know, the algos and the you know, and like the best I could do was, you know, kind of buy and hold and be a part of the system. And so I started hearing about Bitcoin when it was coming out because I was really, you know, interested in this stuff. And I actually wanted to buy some. I had no idea how to do it. I was so busy. And of course, just like so many of the rest of us, I just didn't do it, but it was there. And then, you know, I started doing Ninja Warrior, and you'll see how this ties in. But nice. My buddy did Ninja Warrior, and I've been a rock climber like my whole life. I'm super passionate about rock climbing. I actually probably identify more as a rock climber than I do as a doctor. But my buddy did Ninja Warrior. I got to meet all these really amazing, fantastic people. And one of the guys was called the Godfather, David Campbell. This guy is, I mean, he's a great guy. He's a great guy, but totally loves Ninja Warrior, outside the box thinker, doesn't trust government. You know, he's just like this kind of libertarian. And David, forgive me if you're listening, if you're not libertarian, but he seems like very, yeah, you know, very just a really great free thinker. And he told me about Bitcoin and Ethereum. Well, not Ethereum at first, but he told me about Bitcoin. And he had, you know, put some money into Bitcoin. And, you know, I was so fascinated by it. And he kind of started the process for me. And so one night shift working in the ER, I opened up an account and I just bought a little, I think I bought like two or three Bitcoin, you know, just to see what it was going to be like. And then it like ran up like crazy. And I still didn't really understand it well enough. So I was like, this is incredible. I made a good move and got out at like, I don't know, $15,000. Yeah. And like I made a bunch of money, and of course I had to pay taxes on it and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I had one Bitcoin left, you know.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know, I'm gonna trade this just like I trade a stock or an option. I didn't really understand it. And I was like, okay, this, you know, it seems like a great way to, you know, like this volatile instrument to trade around in. And so I didn't really understand it. And I actually, you know, maybe like a 2018 or so, you know, or maybe after 2017 when we kind of dipped way back down, I was up one night and I was thinking about it. And I was talking to another friend, and he said, you know, well, have you ever read the white paper? I said, what's that? And he's like, oh, well, this is like the whole premise on which it's built.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, is it, you know, is it long? No. So I read it that night and I reread it, and I read it like five times. Cause I, you know, I was doing a night shift. It was a slow night shift. And every time I was like, holy shit. You know, I was like,
yeah.
wait a second. Like, this actually like takes out government and corruption. I was like, I got to read it again. So I read it again, and then it would be like, you know, it's best to maybe have some just in case it catches on, kind of thing. And I'm like, this could like turn into like a massive real money network. This is like a real thing. This is like, you know, this is like very serious. And it started to dawn on me. And so, you know, I think I bought like 10 Bitcoin that night. And then,
nice.
And then, you know, Bitcoin kept going. And then, you know, by the time this last March came around and we got this huge dip, I was like, hell yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And so
that's when you know you're a true hodler. You know, you see it wick down like 40% and you're like, yes.
Right. I want Bitcoin to actually something bad to happen and everybody, you know, get liquidated. You know, I want margin calls in the stock market and the stock market to crash, because I know it's probably going to crash Bitcoin. Because everybody's going to have to raise money, and then I'll get to buy more. Yeah, at this point, I'm never selling. Like, my Bitcoin are off the, you know. But so like in March, you know, I went up, and I think my goal was to get 21 Bitcoin, because that would be like a millionth of the float.
Yep.
And so like that was my initial goal, and it was much easier in March. You know, now it's like so. But the funny thing is now that I have what I view as a real understanding of it, I am so orange-pilled that I don't even think my Bitcoin has gone up in value since then. And this is the really mind-blowing, expansive thing is one Bitcoin still equals one Bitcoin, you know? And it's like, the value has gone up in these like dollars, which are literally going to become toilet paper. But why am I ever going to sell my Bitcoin for that kind of garbage? I would never do that. Maybe I'll trade my Bitcoin into some property someday if I need it. Maybe I would take it out and use it if I had to for something. You know, I'll give some to charity if it keeps doing super well. But I'm extremely bulled up. And so American Ninja Warrior got me into Bitcoin through the godfather, David Campbell. And that's
amazing.
And actually, I still have like 50 Ethereum that I bought, when they first started. So, I am a maximalist, but I'm probably not going to sell my altcoins just because, why not? Although I really want to put them all into Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I'll just leave those, it's,
Yeah. It's change. The crypto pocket change. So, all right. Tell me a little bit. Let's take a little American Ninja Warrior tangent here, and rock climbing for that matter. Like, so first, what was your experience on the show? I actually have a friend who did it as well. And I don't know, you might know him. Chris Krulik is his name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
of course.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to high school with him.
Oh my God.
Grade school for that matter.
Oh, he's fantastic. He's one of the nicest guys ever.
Super cool dude. Yeah. So I had fun watching that show when he was on. That's how I got introduced to it. So what was your experience like? It seems like a really cool thing.
I was never gifted naturally with athletic skill. I'm a good rock climber. Like, I'm decent by the virtue of the fact that I've done it for 30 years. I was 37 when I started Ninja. I'm 45 now. And, I think that being an ER doc, I'm used to people dying and all this stuff. So when I went out there on the course, I'm a decent climber. I had no nerves. I didn't care at all. And, here's all these kids who are doing like 21 arm pull-ups and, one finger handstand. Like, they're crazy how amazing these ninjas are. And the one thing I had on all of them was just total confidence. So, it's funny because, naturally I wasn't incredible, but some of my friends were. So, I did it with a couple other climbers, Isaac Caldiero, who won and became the first American Ninja Warrior champion. He won $1 million, which was super fun. Brian Arnold and one of my best friends and business partner now, Ian Dory, who's just like, you can't find a better guy in like the world. And now he trades Bitcoin. He loves trading it. But it was really a good experience. I had all the confidence in the world because, what do I care? So I wore a gold suit. And actually, the year I wore a gold suit was kind of I did the best. And we created the Wolf Pack, and we really wanted to beat the tower. No one had ever done it in America. In Ninja Warrior Japan, Sasuke, they had done it. And so it was a great time. It was hard. I trained for 30 hours a week. On top of
being a doctor.
Yeah. I literally went down on my med. I would work nights, and I would work like 8 nights a month. And so 2 nights a week. And so I kind of put that medicine aside so I could try and win Ninja Warrior. I was never good enough to do it, but I got pretty far into stage 2 and, was top 15 guys or something every now and then. I won money. I did 7 seasons and we did Team Ninja Warrior. It was a blast, and those guys are great. The filming, production, all of it is top notch. Matt and Akbar are great. And, we were like a big family, and the ninjas would go out and party whenever we would film, wherever we would film. And it was a lot of fun, I'm glad I'm done with it. It's hard on your body. It's hard.
Yeah, I can imagine. Lots of bumps, bruises. Did you ever break anything?
No. So I was like super careful, and I think climbing, I was pretty good at falling, and I was pretty good at warming up real well. And I think since I was so loose and relaxed, I remained injury free the whole time. So,
yeah. Injuries aren't very common on the show, I guess. So, which makes sense. They take care to prevent that.
They don't show them. Unfortunately, there are quite a few broken bones. And my first season, I put a guy's shoulder back into place. I relocated his shoulder like on the set. They aired it on TV. It was crazy. It was pretty cool, actually. Reduced his shoulder. But
is there a doctor in the house?
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. But no, so Ninja Warrior was a really great thing. And I guess, you know, that also ties into my Bitcoin journey, because, you know, I've never really been scared to try new things. I think Helen Keller said life is either complete daring or nothing at all. And, you know, I think it's totally true. You know, we're here for like a moment, and, you know, you want to make the world a better place and leave it a little bit better than you found it, and kind of enjoy yourself. You know, we're all on the same team. And right now things are so, divisive and polarized in our country. Yeah. And to have something like Bitcoin, where there's really quite a bit of hope that it can really, you know, really make things quite a bit better. You know, I think that a lot of people don't realize what we have in store. Like we've got the real challenges coming. Like the virus, yeah, we've got the vaccine now, and I'm going to get my vaccine probably, you know, in, I don't know, less than a month. And everybody's going to get vaccinated. And I think it's going to be very good. And life's going to kind of come back to normal in some way. But we're still at the end of this credit cycle. We still have this division between the rich and the poor that's only gotten worse. We're still on the brink of a massive banking crisis in Europe. There's a lot of structural problems in the economy. And before this is all said and done, they're going to be printing a gazillion more dollars. And so, you know, we're right on the brink of a lot of much tougher, really hard times. And, you know, it's fascinating, but it's a little scary as well. And so, you know, it was fun to do something fun like Ninja. And now it's fun to be a part of this Bitcoin movement and a part of, you know, the cheerleading that goes on and the education and whatnot. But, you know, I think the real scary times are coming. And unfortunately, those are part of what's going to push mass adoption into Bitcoin, and probably help Bitcoin cannibalize gold eventually as a primary store of value, which, you know, I don't think the very rich are going to let that happen for a very long time. But it's very interesting times that we live in. And I hope on the other side of this, you know, we're going to see some fantastic times, because technology is extremely deflationary, and yep. You know, the real mind benders are that I think eventually we may not even like need or be using money, and we're going to look back and be like, people actually would like spend their time working,
yeah,
for other people. Like, yep. Yeah, they would actually spend their they would actually give their time to other people for like paper tickets.
Yeah.
So interesting times coming.
Yeah. Have you read Jeff Booth's book by chance, The Price of Tomorrow? He talks about deflationary tech. Yeah.
I listened to Yeah. Awesome. He's a great thinker. And yeah, for anybody who wants, he did a great podcast on Palisades, I think. Palisades is a really great, you know, they're very much precious metal people. But yeah, Booth is great. And Price of Tomorrow is fantastic. Everybody should read that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And, you know, we talk about like everything is advancing exponentially, right? I mean, it's because this is all exponential technology that we're kind of building civilization on top of, rebuilding civilization on top of it, including the money, which, you know, you could argue is the foundation of civilization. And
yeah,
at least for now, until we get to the inflection point where we just don't have to work anymore. We live in like a Star Trek world, you know?
I mean, it just what you said there is so important, you know, where money is kind of the bedrock and kind of the starting point for civilization. I don't think people realize that money is as important as fire or as language. You know, money is a way to represent time and energy, you know, and sailors talked about this a bunch. But when you start getting into the philosophy of this stuff, and of course, it all leads back to why Bitcoin is so groundbreaking and so important for the world now. But when you get down to it, you know, just like you know, when you think of, like, if you want to have a campfire, right, you get these logs, right? What's a log? It's a piece of a tree. And what it is it's stored sunlight. It's stored energy. And when you burn it, it releases that energy, and then you get warmth, you get fire, you can cook food, you can melt metal and make a spear. You could do any, you know, you could do whatever, but wood is a form of money when you think about it. And it probably was early money. You know, I'm not a historian, but you know, I'm sure there were places where a good bundle of wood, you could trade that for whatever it was, shells or, you know, whatever the money was of the day. You could still trade wood for money, you know, and people make businesses out of that. But money is a form of stored energy. And when you trade it for wood, you're trading two forms of stored energy. And so when you think about it, you're generally trading money for another form of, you know, production or energy. And it's either energy now or it's energy later, you know, and you can save it.
Right. And
the ability to save up energy and save up money makes it so that when the winter is really cold, you can buy something that you can live through it, you know, and you can have this saved money. And so you don't, in the middle of winter, you don't need to be as productive as you were in summer when it was nice because you've saved up the money. And okay, so now we've got that kind of as a basis. The problem is with all forms of money is that they're controlled by people. And they're usually controlled by people who want to run the show. And people who want to run the show are inherently egotistical, self-motivated, you know, and whatever. They do good in the world, but they also do a lot of bad. But, you know, that's why governments are, there's so much problems with corruption. Because, look, if you can go into government and if somebody, you know, rubs elbows with you and gives you $100,000 to let their company, you know, produce this, you know, whatever it is, you know, you're going to be like, wow, $100,000. I mean, their company's going to do well. It's like a slippery slope. And yeah. So you find, you know, I don't even blame people for being self-interested. But, you know, being self-interested has this kind of negative thing. The beautiful thing about Bitcoin is it encourages self-interest. It encourages, right. Like, it's like, okay, well, look, it's fine. Be selfish. You should try and be rich. You know, it's fine. And then let's just trust and verify, let's verify and keep this money from being corrupted. And, you know, it's so fascinating because now you've got a form of money that, you know, is not losing value over time, and people can't go in and corrupt it by creating more of it, infinitely more of it. You know, money has these five principles, obviously, yep. And scarcity is, you know, just one of the most important things, because if money's not scarce, then, you know, if it's just kind of ubiquitous, if it's everywhere, if money was like sand on the beach, well, everybody would just go to the beach and get a handful of sand whenever they needed it. And, you know, everybody, you know, it wouldn't make any sense.
Right.
And so, you know,
and I think it's because time is scarce, right? Time is scarce. Energy is scarce. Like you can't,
yes.
you can't create energy.
Exactly. And, well, and time is just for us.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Which yeah. is what matters, because it's a, you know, it's a human technology. Money is. And I mean, yeah. So what you're saying there, I think, is really important. Like you have this money that's the foundation of civilization, and then you have capitalism, this idea, and that's the idea that, you know, this sort of selfishness, like you're trying to produce wealth for yourself,
yeah.
But it leads to selfless outcomes because you are incentivized to solve problems for other people, right?
Well, you hire people.
Right. You hire those people because they're good at solving problems for you, right?
Yeah.
So your selfishness and wanting to like generate wealth is transferred into like the selflessness, selfless outcomes, because you're helping other people and you're incentivized to do that. And that's what free markets are supposed to do, right? And, you know, ours does that, but they operate so much more efficiently and effectively when you're on a sound money standard, and you don't have this money corruption in the middle that's, you know, just changing all the price signals, messing up everything. You don't know what's actually an effective solution anymore. And if we have a sound money, then we'll just solve problems that much more efficiently, and just really kind of go in line with that deflationary technology curve as well. And it just encourages it. And I totally agree that we're going to get to a point sometime where, you know, basically all human needs and wants are met at very, very cheap or free, you know, rates. And like, you'll have time to spend on whatever you want, you know, what you're passionate about, what you want to search for.
Naval, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing him right, but, you know,
Naval Ravikant.
Naval had a really interesting thought experiment, which was, you know, take everybody in the world, all 7 billion of us, and teach everybody how to be a mathematician, engineer, applied scientist, researcher, you know, whatever, just all hardcore science, engineering. And he said, like, look, can you imagine? I mean, in 20 years, every problem would probably be solved in terms of, like, you know, trying to get work done. You know, like you'd have equipment and machines and, so, you know, it moves a lot slower than that, but technology by its nature is doubling, and you build a stronger machine, it in turn can build a stronger machine. And, you know, the same is true with, you know, all the machine learning and neural networks and AI that's happening right now. And, you know, it's funny because all this stuff is happening at the exact same time, and it's accelerating in a time where, you know, you have this new idea and this new technology come out, Bitcoin, which is simple and elegant. It's immutable. It's finite. It fulfills all the characteristics of money. I mean, you know, whatever team or whoever Satoshi, you know, whoever it was who made this, knew a lot about a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And really, you know, had a keen vision into the future and what would be, you know, a really useful yardstick for valuing time and energy, because we're losing the yardstick of the dollar. You know, we've lost 98% of that yardstick since the Fed was created in 1913. Yeah. And, you know, since we went off the dollar standard, you know, when Nixon took us off in 71, I mean, you know, the purchasing power of the dollar, it's not even a yardstick. You know, it's like, it's kind of like a big joke at this point.
Right.
And now we're in this massive debt trap. And so we have to debase our way out of it because we're not going to default. And, you know, we're not going to, it's like the lesser of all these evils. And so we're on, you know, we're just about to start really printing. I mean, we're really about to start going nuts and trying to save everybody. And, you know, it's just fascinating where we're at. And Bitcoin solves the problem in such an elegant way that it's just kind of mind blowing how perfect the timing is right at the end of this thing. And I feel like it is going to usher humanity, you know, I don't think we'll be around necessarily, but maybe towards the latter part of our lives. I think it's going to, you know, after we get past these choppy waters for, you know, for the next, I'd say 10 years or whatever it's going to be, I think that we're going to reach, you know, a time of, you know, we're going to be moving towards a more, a much more, you know, Star Trek utopian type of future, where I think, you know, life is going to be a lot better for everyone. Education is going to get better. And I think that everything can stand to improve, you know, especially when we get a lot of these old codgers out of the government and this old money system, and we fix, you know, we fix everything. You know, the statement Bitcoin fixes this.
Right.
That's like literal. Like, it literally fixes so many problems. I mean, I'm can't wait until you know, medicine, especially just because it's been my career, benefits from Bitcoin adoption and blockchain integration, especially with regards to like HIPAA and healthcare related information, which, you know, right now it's Wild West and just caveman days in healthcare. Still, it's really pathetic given what we're capable of technologically, like, you know,
it's held us back so much. I mean, if you see, you go to the website WTFHappenedIn1971.com, and
yeah, right.
It's great. It's just like simple genius. But the first chart, you know, which is my favorite, and I think that's why they put it up at the top. And it's also like the share image when you share the site on Twitter and stuff.
Yeah.
It's the graph of productivity, you know, it just kind of keeps rising at the same pace. But in 1971, wages
kind of
just basically flatline. Yeah. And you know, that's like the perfect chart to explain time theft. And yeah. It's, if you think about it, like the technologies that could have been built if we had like fair compensation for that productivity, you know, over time, and like these, and people were actually, you know, rewarded for that productivity, it would just be, you know, the cycle would have been much faster in terms of progress and of these technologies and stuff, I think.
No, that's right. And what people don't realize is that it affects education, it affects every part of society. So it's not only a time theft, it's a true productivity theft. I mean, think it looks like the productivity continues, but that's like productivity as measured by, you know, output. And that's not like a rate of change productivity. That's not productivity. That's not investment productivity. That's not like the return on the investment. It's like a losing proposition. Like eventually that productivity goes down when society starts to fall apart because people have to work three jobs and they, you know, and nothing works and everybody's so dumb that you literally have the fulfillment of like the Mike Judge, is it Mike Judge, the Idiocracy, you know, that movie.
I think so, yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I mean, you're right. It's and it is theft. And it's so funny because, you know, for years and years and years, everybody, oh, China, you know, it's sweatshops and Apple's making these iPhones, you know, for 30 cents, these people get paid nothing for wages. But then like we're moving in that direction.
Yeah.
You know, and so, it's really scary. And it, you know, I've seen the changes in healthcare and you know, just in my life, I've seen the changes, and I feel like, you know, we really need to kind of redefine our focus. And the thing that's hard is, you know, capitalism is great and free markets are really, great, but if they're always looking for money as like the bottom line, because money in itself is losing value over time.
Yep.
And so making more money needs to be the most important thing.
Yep.
You know, so that's the thing about the whole, about Bitcoin and about like an immutable, uncorruptible, decentralized way to pay each other and value each other's time is all of a sudden you don't have to like, you know, I mean, well, Michael Saylor took, you know, his whole company's treasuries and put it into Bitcoin. I mean, like, which makes sense, but imagine if we didn't have to do that and everybody was on the Bitcoin standard, you know, all of a sudden it's not necessarily about being, you know, staying ahead and keeping your company going and staying, you know,
chasing those quarterly earnings and like planned obsolescence and all that stuff. It incentivizes all that.
Yeah. Now all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, you know, you can do more with your money in terms of something good for society.
Yeah.
You can do more programs because all of a sudden you're not losing, you know, we're all in like this losing game right now. There's, you know, it's all of our money is not, I mean, we're not because we've got some Bitcoin, but you know, like, you know, most people are in this losing game where, every year, you know, they're getting hammered by taxes, getting hammered by, you know, the purchasing power of the dollar, you know, disappearing.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting times. I'm really fascinated by it all.
So I think that, you know, this year may be the most, like March of this year might have been the best like risk reward adjusted time to buy Bitcoin ever, because it's been de-risked so much at this point. It's, you know, it was 11 years old, just turned 11 years old. And You can buy it for, you know, $4,000 on the week, but more like $5,500. You could easily pick some up at that level. And, you know, just here we are 9 months later, not even 9 months, and looking at 19,500, you know, right now, brushing up on the all-time high. We're going to break through that at some point. Yeah. And then the circus really starts, and
that's,
you know, it's going to be crazy. What was some of the more surprising Bitcoin events that happened this year, and, you know, some of the more bullish events in your mind?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when they stepped in really quickly in the middle of the pandemic and announced like QE Infinity and that they were going to print. I mean, I remembered instantly back to the great financial crisis. And I was like, yep. Oh my God, all this money is going to go straight into assets. And I saw Bitcoin. I was like, this is going to go straight into Bitcoin. This is going to go. So I actually, you know, I wasn't surprised to see everything just start going up.
Yep.
Up. You know, I didn't know you know, that it would be so dramatic. I think we're all like shocked. You know, if you told somebody that the stock market was at its all time high, but the joblessness is, I mean, you know, if you were to tell us like last year this time, what was going to happen over the next year, pandemic was going to come that was going to kill a gazillion people, but then it was also going to be politicized and used in all these ways, and you know, there was going to be very polarizing, and people were going to have, you know, thoughts on every side, and the markets were going to crash. But then later in the year,
protests in the streets, you know,
protests in the streets, social, you know, unrest, stock market at all time high though. So don't worry.
Don't worry.
You'd be like, wait, what? You know, you'd be like, that doesn't, okay. All right. You know, like, so, you know, I think
greatest economy of all time.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's just the based on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you know, that's
greatest economy. It was unprecedented, never been done before. But, you know, so, you know, that what I think was surprising was how far, you know, just kind of how far Bitcoin dropped. And so for me, that was like an indication that the hodling wasn't quite as strong as I had thought at that point in time. So for me, being a true hodler, like, I'm never going to sell Bitcoin. Like, I'm going to transact in Bitcoin in 30 years, probably. Like, I dollars are garbage to me. So I don't even value, I don't like to value Bitcoin in dollars. It's like, so, it's so funny. It's like one Bitcoin is one Bitcoin. Like, that's its value. And like, It can buy more things, but like, tell me what, you know, how much real estate a big
exactly. What matters is the percentage of the blockchain that you own, you know, the percentage of the supply total, you know, 21 million. What percent of 21 million do you own?
Like, that's 21 million. It's like,
I want to see that number go up. Yeah.
So the, you know, I think that it was surprising to me how much Bitcoin sold off, and what I realized was that there were some other metrics I needed to look at. So now, like, there's some really fascinating charts about the amount of Bitcoin held on the exchanges.
Yep.
And it's going down. It's going down more than it's ever gone. And we are transferring to really strong hands.
Yep.
Who are going to run this thing through the roof. And so, you know, I've never been more sure of Bitcoin's purchasing power going up. I'm not going to say, you know, it's dollar value. And plus, who cares? Like, who cares if Bitcoin is, let's say it's $500,000 a coin. Like, who the hell cares if, you know, like, your house is worth $80 million? You know, like if Bitcoin is $500,000 a coin, yeah, there might be like this window where that will buy you a bunch of stuff. But it's hard to even say, because you're using a yardstick that is just keeps getting cut in half and cut. And it's like Zeno's paragraph, you know, or a paradox, where it's like, you know, it's like, you know, the dollar is going to be worth like 0.00000 cents, you know, compared to what it used to be. So, but I was surprised at, that so many people sold. And I think that because of that, I am more prepared now for, another event like that. I do think that at some point there's going to be a reckoning in the capital markets. And I think that the stock markets are going to have just incredible volatility. And I don't know if it's going to be, you know, a Great Depression, like 80% correction. I don't know if it's going to be a 40% correction, 50%. You know, those things always happen. There's going to be some massive correction in the stock market. And we know that the notional value of derivatives in this world are quadrillions of dollars. Okay. Yep. And we know that people are so leveraged that the only place that they can go and get money from is to liquidate their liquid assets. Yep. Well, Bitcoin is a very liquid asset. So I don't care, you know, who's a hodler and who's not, you know, a real hodler is not leveraged out the ass. They're savers, you know. Right. But the problem is there's a lot of, you know, not smart money hodlers who own four houses and have four notes. And by the way, are using margin in their, you know, TD Ameritrade account. And guess what happens? You know, their Bitcoin's going to be worth $200,000, but all of a sudden they're going to get margin calls. And their houses are going to, you know, the housing market's going to crash. And so, you know, all of a sudden it's going to liquidate. And the smart money is going to just sit there and just wait for the dip and buy more. But what I learned from March was that it's totally possible that we get another big correction. But, you know, is it so maybe we're at 100,000 and we come back down to 20,000? You know, so I don't know what or when or how much, but I do want to be ready just in case, because I have full conviction. So that was one of the biggest lessons for me. You know, I mean, everybody's so bulled up throwing out big numbers for the coming years. And great, if that happens, great. But, you know, I think that everybody's thinking about it in dollar terms. And I think that we need to be ready for another black swan event, like a massive banking crisis. We've had liquidity problems, but if we get an insolvency crisis where, you know, 20% of these zombie companies fold and everybody's out of a job, and now they're literally sending more helicopter money and UBI and all this stuff, but the stock market collapses, I think you could very well see a big collapse in Bitcoin and the price of Bitcoin. Could go the other way. I don't know. I have no idea. But what I'm saying is March was surprising to me. And I was in a position to take advantage of it, luckily, but like not anywhere near, you know, what I would have liked. You know, I wish I had like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars sitting there in March to, yeah. You know. So I what I think is like, I want to play contrarian and say, yeah, Bitcoin is going to the moon, probably. I don't see how a finite supply with accelerating demand doesn't go to the moon. I mean, it's going to the moon. It is. It's either that or it's something we don't know and it's going to fail somehow spectacularly.
Exactly.
Which I just don't even, I'll see that. But you know, on the way to the moon, could it get like annihilated and could the price fall down to $4,000 again? It's not outside of the realm of possibility. Seems unlikely, but I want to be ready for that. And so, you know, I'm accumulating still Bitcoin. Like with Swan, I dollar cost average every week. And again, I don't get anything from you from Swan or anything. I like the idea that I'm consistently buying and dollar cost averaging, because that's like you can't time the market. So right. You know, you could put all your money into Bitcoin now. It could be the best move ever, or it could be $10,000 next week. You know, it really could. So you know, but I'm storing up a position, and I still have some short-term cash that I'm building up, and I don't put it all into Bitcoin. I'm a maximalist, but you know, at this point, I'm opportunistic also, and I see potentially really bad times coming. So, you know, it's good to stay frosty and have options. And so, you know, that's kind of where I'm at now. Although I'm hyper bullish, just like everybody.
Long-term hyper bullish. Yeah, exactly. It's a long-term game. And that's one of those things you learn as the lawyer in the space. It's just lengthen that time horizon. That's why dollar cost averaging is good. I mean, it's still early days, like you were saying earlier. You know, it's still early. It's accumulating now. Makes sense. It's gonna make sense all decade long, I would imagine. There's gonna be ups and downs because, you know, like you said, Bitcoin's liquid. It's not immune to, you know, what's going on in the market around it. It's you know, it's correlated at times, uncorrelated at times. But when you have a massive, you know, liquidity crisis, there's, you know, it's gonna go down.
It's gonna suck it out of Bitcoin. Yeah, and HODL. I mean, if there's one thing I would tell anybody, it's HODL. You know, don't do what I did the first time, which was my first time around. I sold my few Bitcoin for, you know, a profit.
Yep.
And, you know, I just HODL.
Just hold. That's all you got to do. HODL on, man.
Hold on for dear life and just forget about the Bitcoin. Make money. Put more money into Bitcoin. You know, put a certain amount aside every week and, you know, but we didn't really get into it. It does interest me, and I am wondering about the whole DeFi and earning interest on your on your Bitcoin, which I think is interesting. And I do a portion of my holding, but I've heard some people say, you know, that's like picking up pennies in front of a steamroller.
Yeah.
and I get it, but you know, yield is. Yield is good, and so you know that's some place I want to learn more about, and how not your coins, if it's not in your wallet, not if you don't have the keys, not your keys, not your coins. So you know that's a big place where I want to learn more, and I'm curious what's going to happen there. And it seems like there's more risk, obviously, there, but I think the future does have an element of decentralized finance, and it does make sense to, you know, when you loan out your money for someone else to use it in a productive way, from like an Austrian economic standpoint, you deserve to make money for that, for loaning out your capital and giving it some velocity. You know, it helps society, and so you know, it makes sense to. But whenever you do that, you do need to. It's funny because it's kind of like the slippery slope, and you do need to trust a third party, and you do need to take on some risk to do that.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting to me, and that's where I'm focusing some of my time and thinking nowadays. And I have exposure to that kind of risk, So I'm still learning, and I'm still learning about all that, but I recommend people go to, you know, hope.com, like Sailor's site. You know, there's great resources on Swan Bitcoin. There's great resources everywhere nowadays. The podcasts are just phenomenal that are coming out. Yep. And,
amazing writing coming out, books all the time, essays being dropped by just incredible writers and thinkers. It's an amazing time. It's changed so much in terms of education that's available out there, freely available in the past couple of years. It's just really built up and you know, good timing. Bitcoiners say that the bear markets are for building, and the bull markets are, you know, for like stacking, I guess, and just trying to survive. Because, you know,
the bear markets are for building, and the bull markets are for building also.
They're for building. They're for growing, for sure. Yeah. Just trying to survive because of all the demand that's going to come in. So that's one of the hard things about running a Bitcoin business. If you can assume that cycles like this will continue to play out, you've got to build and plan for 2-year bear markets where, you know, the intention is going to go away and the spotlight disappears, and then you're going to have like a feast period, and you just got to, you know, plan for that way.
Man, I think fireworks are coming. I think, you know, the likes of which we've never seen. It's hard to wrap your mind around a truly finite asset. You know, it's like, imagine if somebody told you, oh, there's only 21 million diamonds now in the world forever.
Right.
Like, how much would a diamond cost? a diamond would be, you know, I mean, look at the market cap of diamonds. You can know exactly what.
And it has no other purpose, right? It's just money. It's pure monetary premium. I think there's no That's it. That's what it's made for. It's designed to be the perfect money.
It's designed to be honest and verifiable.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like actual trust. I mean, that's its intrinsic value. It's the world's first actually trustworthy
thing. Money. Yeah. Or thing in period.
Yeah, thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing. I mean, well, besides math, which of course it is math,
which you know, is
that's the thing. It's an a priori trustable thing. It's like an actual yardstick. It's just like an atomic clock or something. It's amazing. So one Bitcoin now is worth the same as one Bitcoin is going to be worth, you know, in 1,000 years ostensibly. But
one 21 millionth of the supply. That's what it's going to be worth.
Exactly right.
Man, this has been great.
I agree.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Let's do it again. We should have you on one of the Swan shows sometime.
Oh, I'd love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Appreciate you sharing your story, your time. Is there anything you want to share in terms of like finding you on the internet or resources that you have available out there?
Well, my social is at Noah Kaufman, MD, just one F, one N, Noah Kaufman, MD on Twitter. And I'm on Instagram as well if you just want to see rock climbing and life photos and stuff. But I think that's probably the best place to find me. I do consulting work. I love to do public speaking, and I do some expert work with within medicine, legal, and finance. And so it's exciting, and I love talking to people. I love when people reach out, and I love thinking through things, and especially being an optimist, I really love the way everything's going. And I think, you know, sometimes you need a forest fire, and sometimes you need some pain for growth. And I think we're going through that as a society right now. And, I want to cheerlead and be optimistic. And, I think that all the Bitcoin maximalists and all the hodlers are going to be super rewarded for their belief and their undying optimism that the world can be a better place. And that's what this is all about. And that's how we make the world a better place, is by being idealistic like that. So follow me, and I'd love to, hear from you.
You're here, man. That's a beautiful way to finish it up. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you out there on Twitter. And hopefully, like I said, hang out in Swan Lounge with us someday.
I will. Thank you, Brady. You guys are great. Right.
Take care, man. Thanks so much to Noah for joining me. You can find him on Twitter at Noah Kaufman, ND. That is NoahKaufmanMD. And I'm at Citizen Bitcoin on Bitcoin Twitter. The podcast website is citizenbitcoin.world. Send that URL to your family and friends. Get them on board with Bitcoin. Spread that knowledge. This is a fun podcast to share with family and friends. It's, laid back and just Bitcoiner talk. If you want to share one in particular, an episode in particular, check out the episode with Robert Breedlove titled Money, Time, and Bitcoin from First Principles. A fantastic introduction to Bitcoin from the very beginning, base just talking about money, how money and time relate to each other, and how Bitcoin is real money and is much better than any money that we've had in history. It's a great one. So I'd share that one first and just get them to subscribe and get them stacking on Swan. This is the best way to scale into Bitcoin, to even out the volatility, to kind of achieve that Bitcoin Zen. You don't have to worry about the price fluctuations. You know you're going to buy the dips, and you're going to buy the tops too, but the tops are usually a lot shorter than the dips. So you average in with a really good cost basis, and you can sign up for SwanForce at swanforce.com/enlist. Get a ref code and stack some sats yourself as your family and friends stack their own. You can check out my merch shop at layer1btc.com. Click on partners and then Citizen Bitcoin. There's some cool stuff there to check out. All right. Oh, don't sleep on Bitcoin TV. It's been a lot of fun. BitcoinTV.network, 24/7 stream of the best Bitcoin content on the web. It's awesome. Check it out.
If you have any questions for me, please feel free to reach out. I am on Twitter, of course, at Citizen Bitcoin. My DMs are open, and I'm also at Citizen Bitcoin on Telegram. All right, that's it for this week. Take care out there, Bitcoiners, wherever you happen to be in the world.